Welcome to Now. I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Aisha Khalid.
Today, we want to introduce you to some folks who are taking the big step of becoming American citizens.
You know, when you're not a citizen, you're stressed. Anything can happen. You can go back to your country for good. Here, it's more opportunity. It's like the country of opportunity. So I'm happy.
The World Cup football tournament starts in about 2 weeks, but will corruption play a role?
We'll find out how a mother's gum disease could affect the life and health of her unborn child.
A new documentary takes audiences into the heart of war. And he's been making rock and roll for nearly 5 decades. We'll hear about Bruce Springsteen's storied career.
That's all coming up on this Wednesday edition of Now.
Aisha, you came to the United States from Pakistan. Now, did you become an American citizen?
Yes, I did.
There's a whole bunch of forms and stuff you have to fill out. Did you do it online or did you have to write all those forms out?
I did online and I became a U.S. citizen just as easily as you said.
Really?
But I know for a fact that for most of the people, it's not as easily as it sounds.
Well, the thing is, there's several things you have to learn. You have to learn to speak English fluently. You have to know all this stuff about American history and all that kind of stuff. My wife is a naturalized citizen. She was born in Germany, but she didn't become a citizen until the late 1980s. So she had to go through all the testing and all that kind of, and they give you the little flag, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It's really kind of neat.
Yeah, you're right. I think as long as you are a legal citizen, you are a legal resident in the United States, you can live here for, you know, longer periods of time without becoming a citizen.
Yeah, but you know, each year hundreds of thousands of immigrants become American citizens, just like my wife and just like you.
Yes, and VOA's Adam Phillips attended one such event at Federal Hall in downtown Manhattan.
75 soon-to-be Americans from 31 countries stood quietly, hands over hearts, as opera diva Rachel Durkin sang the national anthem under the rotunda at Federal Hall. That's where George Washington took the oath of office as America's first president in 1789.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light?
Within moments, U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Jed Johnson was leading them in the oath of allegiance that would formalize their transformation into American citizens.
I hereby declare on oath that I absolutely and entirely renounce and abjure all allegiance and fidelity.
An array of ethnic and national dress was on display, from headscarves to traditional African robes and colorful Latina shawls. But Secretary Johnson welcomed them into one united American family.
I suspect this happens to you a lot. People look at you. They hear your accent. They look at the shade of your skin. They hear your name. And they say, where are you from? Well, today, from this point forward, you are fully entitled to tell them, I am an American, just like you.
Emotions ran high after the ceremony. Leslie Alissi, who emigrated from Canada, grasped her naturalization certificate and a small American flag in one hand and wiped away a tear with the other, while her 10-year-old son, Lev, looked on.
I think I feel emotion for myself because it is such a momentous occasion, but I also am just blown away by the number of cultures that all come together and everybody's trying to make a better life for themselves and for their children. I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional, but this is what it's all about.
Those wishing to become American citizens must walk a long legal and bureaucratic road whose outcome is uncertain. Applicants must demonstrate basic knowledge of American history and how the American government and Constitution work. Aisha Tulama Ba from Sierra Leone was relieved those hurdles are now behind her.
Because I've been waiting for this day all my life. You know, when you're not a citizen, you're stressed. Anything can happen. You can go back to your country for good. Here, it's more opportunity. It's like the country of opportunity. So I'm happy.
So is Mamadou Gueye from Ivory Coast in West Africa.
Today is a big day for me. It's a big moment. The sense, you know, of, you know, the Constitution of America. That's what, you know, I'm proud today.
What does that mean to the folks back home that you're American now?
If I go back home, mean to them is a big thing. Because United States is a big country. It's, you know, the one of the big country in the world. Mm-hmm. So when you became a citizen of that country, it means everything for you.
Gueye emphasized the point with a heartfelt rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. Some of his notes may be a bit off, but Gueye says he has a lifetime to learn his new national anthem. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
So what about you? Have you ever thought of coming to the United States to stay?
We welcome your questions or comments. Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
We might read your comments on the air in a future show.
You don't like soccer?
I'm not really what you call a fan. I can appreciate what the Brazilians call the beautiful game. You know, you can look at people that are really good, you know, and you can just go, wow, wow, that's good. I couldn't do that if you pointed a gun at me. That's just, you know, we are only about 2 weeks, though, from the biggest football party in the world. That's when the World Cup kicks off in Sao Paulo, Brazil, on June 12th.
But will illegal gamblers spoil the tournaments for some fans?
I hope not.
As VOA's Jeff Young found out, the battle against corruption in sports is never ending.
Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. On June 12th, the event football fans everywhere have spent 4 years waiting for begins. It's the 2014 World Cup. Teams will battle their way from then until the championship match on July 13th. Fans are not just cheering on their favorite teams. Many are also eager to wager on the matches. And not only the World Cup. There is a global betting frenzy covering football, cricket, tennis, motorsports, competitions of every kind. A just-released report from the International Center for Sports Security in Qatar and the Sorbonne in Paris quantifies the global gambling action. Via Skype, ICSS Director of Sport Integrity Chris Eaton.
Taking the illegal market, the under-regulated or grey market, and the totally legal market together, it's really close to $1 trillion annually gambled on sport today.
Analysts say that $1 billion was bet worldwide on a single game in 2010, the World Cup title match. This new report says that sports betting is used worldwide by organized crime syndicates to launder some US $140 billion a year, and that the internet now handles 30% of all the action. The ICSS Sorbonne report says that Asia accounts for 53% of the world's illegal gambling, and it turns out that illicit bookmakers and legal betting houses are linked together, says University of Salford, Birmingham gambling analyst David Forrest via Skype.
Those small guys tend to take the stake and quickly pass it on up a chain so they don't handle the risk themselves. And at the top of this chain lie legal bookmakers who are registered in the Philippines, the five biggest bookmakers in the world.
Illegal gambling has taken on some of the risk management practices of Wall Street, where hedge fund traders may take positions both for and against a particular stock or security to help ensure that they win regardless of the outcome. Via Skype, University of South Florida gambling analyst Richard Borghese.
Illegal bookmakers will collect their bets, and if they end up with a naked position on one side or the other, they will lay off their risk by betting on the opposite teams in the legalized gambling market.
The ICSS Sorbonne study says the sports gambling industry needs to develop international reporting and accountability systems, much like those that have been established in recent decades in the global financial markets. Again, the ICSS Chris Eaton.
We need the same sort of cooperative model operating in the gambling side and the bookmaking side of international sport, so that we can see exactly who is transacting what and how, so you can pick the anomalies.
In sports, there are always winners and there are losers. Regardless of the outcome of the game, there was always money, big money, going into someone's pocket. Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
So what about you? Do you think corruption spoils sports competition?
Do you have a favorite team for the World Cup?
Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And we're also on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
And you can email us your thoughts by addressing it to voaasia@voanews.com.
A new documentary takes an inside look at the intensity and the horror of war.
The film The Hornet's Nest takes viewers into a pitched battle between U.S. forces and the Taliban in Afghanistan.
As VOA's Penelope Pulu found out, the filmmakers hope that the movie gives the folks back home some idea of what combatants go through.
This scene is not out of a Hollywood movie. These are not actors. They are real soldiers fighting in one of the most dangerous areas of Afghanistan. War correspondent Mike Betcher shot many hours of footage during an armed forces mission that turned into a relentless 9-day battle between U.S. troops and the Taliban.
That was the hardest battle in war that I've been in. And no, I didn't think I was coming out of there.
Many soldiers didn't.
They gave their lives for the people back home, whether those people agreed with this war or not.
I didn't want them forgotten. And I felt the film was the best way to capture that moment in history and to tell their stories so that their sacrifice, their efforts in this war would not be anonymous.
The documentary, The Hornet's Nest, is also about the living.
It was the forgotten war. The 99% of the nation that does not feel the pain of war does not connect with that less than 1% that does. And those are American troops and their families.
The filmmaker says society has to do much more to care for the returning veterans who have suffered physical and emotional wounds.
The fact that 22 to 23 veterans a day are committing suicide is astounding to me.
Mike Betcher says back from the battle, many men and women feel lonely, unappreciated, unable to convey even to their closest ones what war is like. He says his film offers a front row seat onto the battlefield, giving us a deeper look into soldiers' experiences and trauma. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Tomorrow way too far away, and we can get back yesterday. But we young right now, we got right now, so get up right now, 'cause all we got is right now.
The World Health Organization says an estimated 15 million babies are born prematurely every year.
Of those born preterm, more than 1 million children will die from preterm pregnancy complications.
What role does a mother's oral health play in her unborn child's health?
VOA's Jessica Berman tells us that doctors are looking at gum disease as one contributor to preterm births.
Researchers at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas, studied the placental tissue of 320 women, most of whom delivered vaginally. They discovered that the placenta is inhabited by some 300 different types of mostly harmless bacteria, which help to shape the newborn's health and populate the baby's gut. That contradicts the traditional notion that those microbes originate in the mother's vaginal canal and are transferred to the baby during birth. Investigators discovered that the mix of bacteria in an infant's microbiome is not very similar to the vaginal microbiome. They traced the bacteria in the placentas of women who'd recently given birth to microbes found in the mother's mouths. Lead researcher Kjersti Agard says that may explain why women with diseased gums often give birth to babies at less than 37 weeks gestation, which is considered preterm. The normal gestational period is around 40 weeks. Writing in the journal Science Translational Medicine, Agard says researchers believe the oral bacteria traveled to the placenta through the mother's bloodstream.
One of the characteristics of having gum disease is you have a lot more bleeding gums and they're recessed back. And so it's possible that one of the reasons why women who have periodontal disease have preterm birth is because they get different seedings of that placental microbiome that in turn creates some sort of inflammatory response.
The placenta, which is attached to the wall of the uterus by the umbilical cord, is the only organ that forms in adult life and is discarded after birth. The sac not only nourishes the growing fetus and provides oxygen, it filters out waste and secretes hormones that maintain the pregnancy. Researchers found the placental microbiome of women who gave birth to premature babies was different than that of women who delivered babies at full term. Agard says a number of factors contribute to prematurity. Some include smoking and diet and are within the mother's control. Others, like the placental biome, are not. And Agard says women should not blame themselves for delivering premature babies.
In this situation, we really want women to step away from that, I accept the blame for what happened in this pregnancy, and much more one towards, well, if there are things that put me at risk for preterm birth that I can change, then I'm going to do everything within my power to change those.
By learning more about the microbial environment prior to delivery, researchers hope to identify women who are at high risk for preterm deliveries. If they survive, low birth weight infants are at increased risk for health and developmental issues, including cerebral palsy, lung and gastrointestinal problems, and vision and hearing loss. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Aisha, do you have a favorite singer?
Yes, David, there are a few. But late Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan and Abida Parveen from Pakistan top the list.
Okay.
Yeah, just take a listen.
All righty. Well, I've never heard of these guys, but that's some good music. So I don't know if I have a favorite, but, you know, for millions of people worldwide, the man known as the Boss, Bruce Springsteen, is the ultimate rock star.
As VOA's Faiza Al-Masri and Faith Lapidus tell us, a new book profiles Springsteen's nearly five decades in rock and roll.
You and me, we were the pretenders. We let it all slip away. In the end, what you don't surrender.
Springsteen, nicknamed The Boss, is known for his poetic lyrics that tackle social and political issues and his energetic stage performances. Music journalist Jim Baviglia says the artist's upbringing in a New Jersey working-class family profoundly affected his music.
The social and the political issues, Springsteen's never been shy about writing about those. They sort of started to come into play with an album called Darkness on the Edge of Town, where he started to look at sort of small town lives and how people, you know, just sort of doing the same things that their parents did and couldn't get out of that. And then as he goes on, those issues start to expand to some really darker stuff on an album called Nebraska, where a lot of it is people sort of pushed to the edge by poverty, committing crimes and things like that.
Got a one-way ticket to the promised land. You got a hole in your belly and a gun in your hand. Sleeping on a pillow of solid rock.
Even in the city, going down.
There's an album called The Ghost of Tom Joad where he really takes social issues to the forefront, looking at things like immigration and poverty and hunger. And right to the present time, just a few years ago, an album called Wrecking Ball, which really pointed at the sort of the financial leaders and the powers that allow the sort of dichotomy between the rich and the poor.
One of Springsteen's best-known songs is Born in the USA. Number 9 on Baviglia's list.
It's this amazingly complex song. It's got this really rousing music, very patriotic, big drums. You know, it's used in fireworks displays. But when you get to the lyrics, it's a very sharp criticism of the way America treated its Vietnam vets upon returning home. Came out in 1984. At the time, Ronald Reagan was running for re-election, and a couple conservative politicians sort of picked up on the song. They didn't hear the criticism part. They talked about how Springsteen, you know, sort of reflected the American values, and I believe Reagan even mentioned him in one of his campaign speeches. And Springsteen, when he found out about that, quickly pulled back and he said, well, wait a second here. They're sort of mistaking this song here. This is more of a criticism, and, you know, maybe their values don't sort of coincide with my values.
Springsteen also wrote about personal relationships. Baviglia puts Brilliant Disguise from the 1987 Tunnel of Love album in fifth place on his Springsteen's 100 Finest Songs list.
It's basically a couple who are putting on disguises for each other because they don't reveal their true selves, and there's mistrust, and the relationship is kind of crumbling.
Tell me what I see.
Baviglia says that was the state of Springsteen's marriage at the time. He and his first wife divorced shortly after. Born to Run tops Baviglia's list. He says after disappointing sales of Springsteen's first two albums, his label was thinking about dropping him. But Born to Run hit the charts in 1975 and saved Springsteen's career.
The lyrics, they leave you breathless. This idea of, you know, maybe we never can actually get free from our past, from our hometowns and things like that, but you have to give it a shot and take your chance. You know, it cost a lot of money to produce. He used all these instruments, and had it failed, I mean, we might not be talking about Bruce Springsteen today.
But we are talking about him and listening to him. Born to Run has become Springsteen's signature song. He plays it at the end of every concert. Jim Baviglia says the Boss's ability to stay true to himself and express ordinary people's concerns and hopes is what has made him a living legend. For writer Faiza El Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Now.
We would love to hear your questions or comments. You can post them on our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
We might read one of your comments on a future show.
We are also on Twitter. Our address there is at Now VOA Show.
And you can email us. Our address is voaasia@voanews.com.
Patrice Martin produces our show.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Until next time, I'm Aisha Khalid.
And I'm David Byrd. Join us again Monday for another edition of Now.